This practice of meditation that we're engaged in is sometimes described as a process of developing the twin qualities or capacities of mind that we call calm and insight. Calm we also speak of in terms of focus, steadiness, sometimes concentration, if we understand that word correctly. And it's primarily supported by the simplifying, steadying, and stabilizing the mind on a singular, particular object or topic. It actually, in the end, doesn't really matter so much what we might use for that. In the context of this retreat, we've suggested and encouraged the using of the breath as a simple and immediately accessible experience that allows the mind to settle by coming back again and again to this experience. That capacity for calm, for focus, for a quieting of the mind's activity is supported. But there are many other things one could use for this. And yet, with the breath, one of its great benefits is that it's equally useful and beneficial for the process of developing insight, which isn't so much about trying to steady the mind on a particular point, but in fact to sit in a way, not so much sit back, but to sit closely and yet without holding on to the experience. So to bring oneself very near to what's happening with a sense of interest, with a sense of openness. And this is greatly supported by the calming, the steadying of the mind, but it's not the same as. And in some traditions and approaches, it is suggested that one should first develop that calm, focus, steadiness of mind, having done so, one then goes on to cultivate insight, understanding. Here in this retreat, we haven't sought to separate these two qualities so much. The Buddha spoke of samatha vipassana. Samatha is calm, vipassana is insight. And the process of samatha vipassana is actually, it seems to me, most useful and powerful when unified. So at the beginning of the retreat, we're giving a little more emphasis to the samatha part, the calming, steadying, which is supported by simplifying, keeping the attention steady with the breathing, with the feet and walking. But as we become more calm, more steady, more able to stay present with and connect to our experience, more able to rest in the simple awareness of, the simple presence with what's happening, then we can more fully engage that interest, that curiosity that recognizes we do not yet understand all there is to know, all there is to see, to understand about what's happening right here. That sense of curiosity or investigation, interest in what's happening, not an intellectual interest of trying to figure it out with our mind, but an interest that draws us to come close and to be curious about what is happening here. What does it mean to be what we are, this conscious, breathing, human creature that has this remarkable capacity for wakefulness? And with this then there's a opening of the field of attention to a wider and wider range of experience, with ultimately the wish and the intention to include all things, because our practice needs in the end to include all experience if it is to be truly liberating. So the intention with which we're engaging is important, to be clear. Sometimes we might recognize the need for more calm, more steadiness, and then perhaps just simplifying, steadying, focusing the attention more and more on just the breathing, or perhaps on just some part of our body that we're finding our attention drawn to, and just staying there for a little while. But a singular experience can be defined in many different ways. It doesn't have to be just a single point. In the breathing, the whole flow of movement of breath, we can start to sense there's a certain quality to it. And that quality is what we're attending to. Although the experience may be moving, the sensations may be moving in the body. Just the very fluidity of the breathing may be what our attention is settling with. Or it may be a particular location. But at other times we can sense that there's more steadiness. We don't need to just hold the attention in that way. And so we allow the flow of experience to pass more freely through the intentional conscious attention we are giving. I'm aware in saying that, I hope it's clear between intention, which is actually why or what we're intending to do, and attention, which is that capacity to notice and to see what's happening, to direct our attention. It takes intention. And so within the field of experience, we've been invited to include different bodily experiences, both pleasurable, painful, and neutral, to experience parts of the body, what they're like, what that's like, that experience, and equally the whole of the body at times, if that's useful. The sounds that come and go, arising from the silence and returning to the silence. We've also spoken a little about just noticing what's going on in our mind. And this morning I'd like to speak a little more about one very important element of that territory, which I mentioned, I think, some little while ago, as the third foundation of mindfulness. The mind state, or the condition of our consciousness, we could say. In any moment, and in every moment, there's a certain quality to the consciousness that we may or may not be aware of. And it's really useful to become aware of this. So sometimes the mind is bright, and we can notice there's a certain brightness. Sometimes it's dull. We can notice there's a certain dullness. Sometimes there's a sense of expansiveness in the mind. Sometimes there's a kind of contractedness in the mind. Sometimes the mind is affected by craving or aversion. And sometimes the mind is unaffected by craving, unaffected by aversion. Starting to notice the effect in the mind or on the mind of these qualities. Because when we experience, when we encounter the world, we see it, or we meet it through the consciousness. All that we know and experience comes through this medium. And when this medium is coloured in some way, the appearance of experience is coloured likewise. So it's a little bit like having coloured glasses, or coloured spectacles. And so if we're feeling perhaps kind of happy, things might look very bright. And everything looks good. If we're feeling uplifted, it seems that everyone is rather beautiful. And this place here at Friendship Inn is just the most wonderful place. And the teachings are remarkable and intelligent and liberating. And how amazing that we're fortunate enough to hear this. And everything is coloured. The food is delicious. Even my cushion feels like the best cushion. And then maybe at another time the mind is affected by, say, sadness or maybe depression, and things look kind of dull or grey and uninspiring, and perhaps it's sort of like everyone else looks a bit miserable and the teachings seem kind of boring and a bit meaningless and the food has no taste and my cushion's hard and lumpy. And all of that, it's not that the experience has changed, but the lens through which we're seeing it has changed. And we've probably all heard of or probably had the experience of like of falling in love and seeing through rose-coloured spectacles, is the phrase we use in English. That suddenly everything is beautiful, everything is lovely, everything about this person is just amazing. And then some little while later, maybe we're not so in love, or maybe we've completely, the relationship has ended, and we suddenly see this same person so differently. It's not that they've changed so much, but starting to see the way the mind becomes coloured, and how that colours our perception, and if we don't recognise that, we believe that this is how things are. So when we see ourselves through the mind state, of brightness, of happiness, we see ourselves in a positive sense of great, how lovely. Whereas if we may be feeling contracted and we see through that mindset, we might notice all of our limitations or deficiencies and highlight them and come to imagine that this is the truth of who we are. So in the practice, it's really helpful to notice, oh, this is the state of mind right now. It's like the weather in the consciousness, and it changes. It keeps changing. But we often don't realize that. We take it to be absolutely who we are and absolutely what's true. We define ourselves by the state of mind so easily, so often, and so painfully. These states of mind and processes, we need to recognize them clearly. To see that they form a part, and actually to be able to name it. To say, oh, it's this particular state of mind. The mind is like this right now. Knowing that it will be different in a little while. Because it is of the nature to change. And to see this state of mind is, it's in a way the key quality within the process of what we call emotions. And the Buddha didn't have use a word equivalent to emotion. Just perhaps seems a little strange for us in our Western world where it's such a big or significant thing to know about or to have. But if we look at the experience of emotion, what we'll see is that it has different components. And all of these, of course, the Buddha spoke about. There is the state of mind, as I said, the particular flavor or color of the mind. And it's as if color or dye is added to clear water. And suddenly the water is of that color. And through that, processes of thinking start taking place that are coloured in that way. So if we're feeling unhappy, the kind of thinking that comes says, oh, I've always been unhappy. When we identify with the mind state, it's like, oh, my life's unhappy, it's always going to be unhappy. In fact, my parents were pretty unhappy. And, you know, probably my children will be the same. We kind of project this experience into the future, in the story. And the things we remember are the things that confirm it. The things that come to mind confirm the story. Or if we're feeling uplifted, we're feeling good, it's like things are great, I'm great. Yeah, my world has always been great, it will always be great. And it's a story that's in a way expressing the mind state. If we don't see it, if we identify with the content, we become lost in it and we start to believe that it's true. Whereas if we can just see, this is this mind state. Maybe it's depressed, maybe it's excited, maybe it's bored, and we're telling ourselves how boring things are. But actually, boredom, it's kind of interesting. If we notice it, if we don't believe the story and realize, it's a mind state. Just the way the mind is right now, it doesn't feel touched by things so deeply. It can be contracted or expanded, just getting to know that. That's what it's like right now. And with that, there's always the experience going on in the body, together with the state of mind and the thought processes. And what's really useful is coming into the body, as we've suggested in many ways, and just letting oneself feel, this is what it's like in the body. Perhaps I feel it in this part of my body or in that part of my body. And it's like this. Or it feels like that. So often when we notice strong emotion, it's useful to be able to name the state of mind within it. Say, that's anger. Or that's jealousy. Or that's sorrow or grief. Or dullness. Or brightness. And what is that like? I come into the body and feel it. It's like this. It's over here. And can I be with that experience? Can I make space for it? So we're engaging in a process of relating with the experience, seeing if we can meet it from a place of openness and understanding rather than our habitual reactivity, rejecting some states of mind and experience or grasping at others. Not identifying with it in the way we might normally do, but saying, it's just an experience that comes and goes. And so these mind states and the emotions that they become, we can understand them like the weather or like the seasons of our heart. There's a beautiful passage from Khalil Gibran and the Prophet, where he says, if you could keep your heart in wonder at the daily miracle of your life, your sorrow would not seem less miraculous than your joy. And you would accept the seasons of your heart just as you have always accepted the seasons that pass over your land. I think it's really useful to reflect on this beautiful kind of image of the seasons of the heart. It's like, of course, we might wish to always live in summertime when it's bright and sunny and warm. But summer cannot be forever. It must fade into autumn, the fall, and then winter. And its apparent harshness. And yet the remarkable thing of winter is that out of that dying back, that harshness and barrenness of winter, that darkness, comes the fresh growth of spring. And from spring, the fullness of summer. And this is the way of things. So at times we might find ourselves in those places that feel more like winter, where it's hard, where it doesn't feel like there's so much life. And yet to know that just as unstoppably as spring follows winter, so too in the seasons of our heart, life returns and finds its new expression. from even those places that seem most difficult. And that equally as summer cannot continue forever, those most lovely and delightful times and feelings in our heart, they too will fade and change. In the natural order of things, it cannot be other than this. And so the seasons of our heart, the conditions of our mind, we come to know them, to see them, to not take them to be who we are, but simply conditions that change, because they do. And more resting in the capacity to meet them moment by moment, to be present with and aware of what's happening right now, right here. And so we continue in this practice, exploring what it means to be more and more fully awake, more and more fully present, moment by moment.